Luke 4:21 to 30. Listen to these words. And in them hear the word of the Lord. Luke 4:21. Then Jesus began to say to them, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." Jesus has just read to them the passage that says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He's anointed me to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And that's the scripture he means when he says, "Today the scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." All of them spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his mouth. And they said, "Is this not Joseph's son?" He said to them, "Doubtless you will quote to me this proverb, 'Doctor, cure yourself.' And you will say, 'Do here also in your hometown the things that we heard you did at Capernaum.' And he said, 'Truly I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's own hometown. But the truth is, there were many widows in Israel at the time of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, and there was a severe famine all over the land. Yet Elijah was sent to none of them except to a widow at Zarephath in Sidon. There were also many lepers in Israel at the time of the prophet Elisha, and none of them was cleansed except Naaman the Syrian." And when they all heard this, the synagogue was filled with rage. They got up, they drove Jesus out of the town, and led him to the brow of the hill on which their town was built, so that they might hurl him off the cliff. But he passed through the midst of them and went on his way. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. That text just before today's reading, which is not part of the reading but probably should have been, proclaims what Jesus' mission is. It is to bring good news to the poor. This is not about privileged people. This is about freedom to the prisoners, recovering of sight to the blind, release for those who are oppressed, and proclaiming the year of the Lord's favor. Now, those things were not new. When Jesus sat down in the synagogue to read, he was handed the scroll of Isaiah, and he unrolled it, which takes quite some time if you know how a scroll, especially of a long book like Isaiah, is put together. You have to keep unrolling and rolling and finding the spot. What he read was from chapter 61. They probably didn't have chapters back then, but it was way into the text. Jesus looked for that, had it in his mind, and found it and read it to them. And when he read that, those exact words, good news to the poor, freedom to the prisoners, recovering of sight to the blind, release for the oppressed, and proclaiming the year of the Lord's favor, he said to them, as he stopped reading, "Today, this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." Jesus meant that by his own presence, this prophecy that is already ancient by the time Jesus and these elders are sharing in the temple that day is being fulfilled. It is being completed. It doesn't sound like a message for those that are privileged, but maybe a message rather that's designed for those who are hurting. Or maybe the privileged are the ones bound up with most of the hurt, or much of it. Jesus has already been working miracles in Capernaum. And now he's back in his hometown. This, where they tried to run him out of the town and push him off the hillside, happened in his hometown, Nazareth. Jesus was born in Bethlehem, but raised in the small town streets of Nazareth with Mary, his mother, and Joseph, the carpenter. And back in his hometown, now, after being on the road for a little while in Capernaum doing the prophet tour, he's got to prove himself again, you know. Here in Nazareth, he is first known as Joseph's boy, not Jesus, Master, Messiah, the light of the world. Jesus, let's see you do the things right here in your hometown that you did in Capernaum, they say. And he says, I tell you the truth, no prophet is accepted in his own hometown. Now, if you read that in the King James Version, you would have had the words, verily I say to you. I want us to explore that a little bit, because here it says, I tell you the truth. If you read that verily, you think, what does that mean? King James Version has a lot of words that we don't know what they mean. But verily, if you think about that root, V-E-R, the word for truth in Spanish is verdad. Verdad. And a word that we use in English is to verify, to confirm whether something is the truth or not. So there is that root, that ver, that is about truth and about something reliable. And Jesus says, verily, I tell you the truth, or I'm telling you the truth. No prophet is accepted in his hometown, where he's called Joseph's boy. And now Jesus is going to tell two stories. And he goes on about the people of Israel, who always seemed to think they had a higher claim on God's deliverance than anybody else. And now they claim Jesus' miracles for themselves. And Jesus teaches them it's just not that simple. And he gives sermon illustrations. How about Elijah, he says. How about Elijah? How about Elisha and Naaman? And if you read those stories, you will see that in each of those is a healing story. And it is not about healing people of Israel. It's about healing people who were the variants, people who were off-center, off the center, if you think of the center as traditional Jewish citizenship or faith. In those stories, Jesus is proclaiming that it's not about just doing good at home. It's about stepping out of the boundaries. And he tells those stories about receiving sight and receiving food, the blessing of the oil multiplied, the bread. And then all of it hits the fan at once. The ugly human burden of prejudice. And these people who Jesus is sharing with in his own hometown, right there in the synagogue, are saying, we deserve miracles more than these other people. We are your people. Call it privilege. Call it racism. It says, we are entitled. We helped to raise you here in Nazareth. We know your parents, Jesus, and we know you. And this is your hometown. You're obliged to help. They wanted something special, something for free. Fickle crowds. We see this again and again in Jesus' ministry. Crowds grow not because they want to hear his teaching, but because they're hungry and they want food. I think that's kind of the origin of the church night dinner, the fellowship supper, whatever we want to call it. We try to reach people by offering food. And it's one thing to offer it, but it's quite another thing to come stomping through the door and demand it, as these are doing. We need to see miracles. We need to see some kind of produce here, Jesus. This is your hometown. You owe that to us. I mean, you did it in Capernaum. Why not here? Jesus' point is outsiders recognize the need for miracles as much or more than the hometown people. And hometown people can come to take them for granted. Jesus' message is for all people, all of creation. Now, as for the text that Lillian read, the 1 Corinthians text, we know that is the love chapter. It's about God's love, not so much about our own. We often read that at weddings, but it's about God's love, not the love between humans. Our love between people in the church, people in the home, those who are spouses, those who have children or parents, those kind of loves are supposed to be reflections of God's love, but can never come close to coming up to it or matching it. In Jeremiah, a popular passage, Jeremiah 1 reads, "Never say, I am only a child. Don't be afraid, for I am with you, I will rescue you, and you are called, you are ordained to carry on the good news." That prophetic word fits what Jesus is telling these people. But here in Luke 4:28, Jesus is struggling with his own people from Nazareth, his hometown. "Isn't this Jesus' boy? I mean, isn't this Joseph's boy," they would say? "Isn't this Joseph's boy?" So it shows the prophecy is true that no prophet is welcome in his own hometown. He might be welcome as a person, but he's not really recognized as a prophet. More of a homeboy. Jesus talks of healing, not without precedent. There's always good news. In fact, that's what the word gospel means. You know, good news. Good news like we have in Psalm 1, the very first of the Psalms. It says that the streams, the living people who are strong in faith will be like trees that are planted next to streams of living water. And they will bear fruit in season and out of season, because they're planted close to the source. Or Revelation 21, kind of another bookend tree and fruit analogy. It says in promise in the last times that the leaves of the tree of life are for the healing of the nations. What a wonderful image. Yet here it seems to be their own familiarity, or their claim of familiarity with Jesus, that prevents them from accepting His miracles. Sometimes it's the hardest to see what is closest to you. You back up, you get some perspective. But what's right there in front of your face is often overlooked. In the Jeremiah passage, there were many persons with skin diseases that needed healing, but only a foreigner, Naaman the Syrian, was healed. That made the crowd irate. The Jewish crowd, of course. Because this foreigner, this Gentile, would never have deserved the healing grace of God. The work of the healing prophet depended on the faith of the people, not the nation that they've come from or how much money they had. There's a movie, probably 20 years old. You've probably seen it. It's called Leap of Faith, Steve Martin movie. If you haven't seen it, you could really enjoy that one. Traveling evangelist, bus breaks down. He takes a walking tour of the city. They say it's going to be 3 or 4 days before his bus can be fixed. He takes a walking tour of the city, takes a look at it, and says, "Set up the tent. We'll play here." And he encounters all kinds of needs. And sometimes the people find their faith or are healed in spite of him, not because of him. He's a self-proclaimed healer, but he's really just in it for the offering plate. The people of that town are desperate for rain because their crops will not grow. They need rain desperately, and that's what they're praying for. And he tells them that rain will come if they'll just give enough. And finally he gives up on them, and his bus gets fixed, and he's headed out of town with everything, including the tent, packed up. And as he's leaving town looking back, there's this sea of people in tents by the side of the road. Moved out of town to pray together and to summon the rain. And as Jonas Nightingale gets out of town, the people get the rain that they've been praying for. It didn't happen while he was there, but once he was out of the way, their prayers became more effective and were answered. And their faith was rewarded. And you know what was the proving sign of their faith? Is that when that rain started to fall on this tent city, every one of those people started putting up their umbrellas. And the rain was dripping off their umbrellas and falling to the earth. And they were protected from it because not only were they praying for it, but they came prepared for that prayer to be answered. They didn't just pray for rain, they brought their umbrellas. And their faith was blocked until Jonas Nightingale got out of town. I love that story. Go get that movie and watch it. I watched it at 3 o'clock in the morning on a youth lock-in for the first time. It was like our second movie of the night, maybe third. Shelley will know all about this, youth lock-ins and showing movies in the middle of the night. By the time that movie was over, I was with probably 30 kids or more, senior high youth. And by the time that movie was over, I was pretty weary. I was the only person left awake in the room. Sitting in chairs we were, some leaning on each other, some on couches. And as the traveling evangelist looked back out the truck window and watched the rain begin to fall, and as those umbrellas went up, I stood up in that room all by myself and just cheered with tears because I was so moved. Of course, I was very weary as well. But we had to watch it another time so that the youth could see it because they didn't get it that night. But the people of Nazareth heard Jesus' teaching right there in his own village. And they rose up and ran him out of town. Can you believe that? They ran him to the crest of the hill to throw him off. But Jesus gave them the slip and folded back through the crowd and went on his way. The life of a prophet is risky. How much of it is like the life of a disciple? How is the life of a disciple hard? And it's okay to admit that it is, because it is. But what is the price of turning away? What is the price of remaining faithful? Of doing the right thing when sometimes the wrong thing would be easier? So, Jesus leaves his hometown, Nazareth. Pretty much gives them over. And he goes back to Capernaum to continue his work.